Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, this is much better. Mucho better, eh?
Mucho better, yes.
How are you guys?
I got a track in the inbox of Josh Letessier.
We talked about it last time. I sent him a message like, hey, did you know Basecheckers knows your name?
Yeah, but I like, hey, grabbing the bull by its horns and just go with it, sending a message right away. And he had a proper track. I got to say, he didn't message back. It was not for us, I also got to admit. But I liked it. He has some good producing quality going on, which I really like. So, Josh,
public rejection.
Of course, you're listening. And saves me an email. You did very well. And I liked it. It's good quality, but not for us right now.
I didn't want to email you back and personally tell you we don't like it. So publicly, I'm gonna shame you.
No, no, no. It was some good shit, but the style just not for us right now.
Makes sense.
Producing quality was really. I mean, there's three guys here, and he would be the number two if he would be here. You get me?
And you would be number one.
Exactly. Hey.
Well, mixing wise, I've definitely not been the very best when it comes down to mixing, as in Yeah, I don't know. Like, I always liked a lot of bass and everything started shaking in clubs. So yeah. Never interested me as well. Like I just didn't care.
How it sounded.
I did care how it started. I just didn't care about the mixing strategics. Like I didn't care about how to get it there. You know.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Said.
It's like the technical aspect of music production also doesn't do it for me. It's like, oh yeah, this compressor does this and this, but I'm like, no, I want to talk more about the idea of a track and the melodies and the feel of a track instead of. Oh, at this much hertz, you have this amazing thing, or so, yeah,
exactly.
I can see where you're coming from.
It would have been better for me if I would have like a co-producer who was much better in mixing and mastering than I was, so that I could work on the creative part of the song, and I just throw the whole thing over the skirting once it's over the fence once it's kind of done, and the other guy.
No, but the thing is, that's the mixing is so much the characteristics of you having your own sound. So I tend to disagree. Yeah, well, so would Skrillex be Skrillex if he would have a sound engineer? No.
I think there's only a couple of artists of which I would say, okay, that's where the mixing is a big part of his sound. One of them is Hartwell.
Afrojack.
Maybe Skrillex. I don't even know. Like,
dude, Skrillex is
great mixing.
I think Afrojack way more than Skrillex. I think Skrillex. Yes, it sounds amazing, but it's if you have all the Skrillex tracks, I'm not sure if you can. You would pick them out of a lineup of tracks where you didn't know who.
Exactly. I think Afrojack, if I would listen to another dubstep song, I think it would sound the same to me. Like. I wouldn't pick it out necessarily on the mixing. And with Hartwell, I do. Like, I can just hear this is a Hartwell song.
The way he sidechains everything.
Hartwell's the king. Let me get that straight. But your opinions of Skrillex, I need to find another podcast. This is not okay. Dudes.
Well, no, but...
What's up?
Skrillex is a great mixing engineer. Like, don't get me wrong.
I think you're not listening, Ralph.
It sounds great. It's just that I don't think it adds to his sound. I don't think people would recognize a Skrillex song.
Dude, he started the sound. He started the whole phase, you know?
I think he started a genre, but not like a mixing sound.
Well, yeah, it's not the genre based on the mixing sound. He challenged the technical barriers of those times and he came up with something new that's just larger than life.
Let's say I I think just more with recent Skrillex, you wouldn't be able to necessarily say, oh, this is his mixing. If it comes to his like later work after dubstep. Maybe in dubstep, yes. But I think in his other stuff, not so much.
Like on YouTube, the Pharaoh is asking, could you explain how mixing defines Afrojack and Hardwell? Mixing about getting the balance right, right?
Afrojack, well, can explain.
Oh yeah, explain, please.
Afrojack is very much, this is one concept, one element of his mixing, is his sidechaining. The way
the quick one.
The way he sidechains his synths is recognizable. He has some kind of, and he doesn't use different equipment for it or special software. He just has the shape of the way the volume of his synths automates is just very recognizable. That's the way you can mix. You mix the synth according to what kind of kick you have. That's where I always feel with Afrojack. He stands out with that, and already for a long time you can just hear, oh, this is an Afrojack kind of kick and synth style.
But yeah, with that sidechain, I must say I'm not even sure if that's, would you consider that's mixing? Like, yes. Sidechain,
yeah, because you can do it in 20 ways, and it very much depends on what kind of kick you're using, what kind of bass, you know. So I definitely consider that part of the mix, because this is the thing where it goes wrong with a lot of guys. They download like Kickstart, which is a great plugin, but then they're like, oh, I just put the preset on and that's it. But if you really get, that's fine, yeah, for like a
Kickstart starting out.
But if you want to really mix it, then you got to really look at your kick and look at your what the synths are doing, what kind of, that has to do with the whole flow of the track and the whole groove. And so yeah, I consider that mixing.
To be honest,
for sure,
nowadays the all the tracks have so much more dynamic in them. You don't need to sidechain that much anymore. I don't even pull my sidechain. I use the LFO tool now, and I don't even have it go to the bottom all the time. Whereas I always used to go to the bottom. I mean, you have all these techno flows. The kicks are taking up less of the EQ spectrum, and yeah, I mean, it's more that you need to make room in the lows up until, let's say, 300 hertz with a sidechain. The volume takes everything away, obviously, but it's more to having that punch get out. Punch goes over the whole spectrum, by the way. But there's no need also with the sounds now and with the kicks we use now. They're more distinctive or less.
We as in bass jackers, right? Not we as a...
As good producers. Yeah. I don't know. How do you do that, Jopke?
I put 5 kickstarts on one sound.
On the master
And then if you then choose randomize, it
I always do kickstart.
I don't think kickstart is too limited at all. I think if you have kickstart 2, it's not limited at all. I think it's really...
I don't even know kickstart 2, to be honest.
No, me neither.
You can finally draw the line.
Amazing. Yeah.
You can also have audio put in and MIDI put in to trigger it. Yeah. So
I would never do that.
I was a big fan of that Afrojack
side. MIDI or like audio to trigger it.
Sorry, what?
I always have go on the grid. Maybe if you were to produce hip hop, but if you make for
MIDI. I love it with MIDI, because then you can just make a MIDI pattern forward to the floor, for example, and just have it everywhere where your kick is, and then your synths automatically, it stops sidechaining.
The MIDI is the starting point. It always has a little bit of latency, which I think is really scary. If you miss the first one, then your punch is fucked.
There's no latency.
And then which shape? And then you can still define the shape. Or does it go through the MIDI signal?
If there was latency, you could always trigger it earlier in the final mix through FL Studio.
Okay. Yeah. I wouldn't do that. Pro tip. Just use a volume shaper. Yeah, it's better. It needs to be always the same also. Yeah. I don't want it to change.
This is why it's so interesting, because it can differ how you produce, because I'm not that interesting in how it works. I'm more like, hey, how does it sound after? What am I doing? If you have Kickstart, try it out for a track, build your, like, let's say your drop on preset one, then use, select everything and turn it to preset two, and you watch the difference it makes for your whole groove. It's really interesting. And then all these things that Ralph and me are now discussing is like, that's also a matter of preference. And yeah, it's all a matter of preference, basically.
So it's all a matter of taste.
Hey,
yeah.
In the end, you can do the fuck you want. Doesn't matter. If it sounds good, it is good.
Yeah, that's the only important thing, right? How it sounds. It doesn't really matter how it's being made. Like,
yeah, but still there are some rules or some common things, best guesses there. There are some things that just won't work.
Well, one of the examples is, one of the things I love to do, and I did it a lot, is once I had like a bass and a kick, and I had it sounding right, I always missed like this kind of top sound on top of that, which makes it sound like crunchy or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I always took that group channel, like the bass and the kick, and pulled it through the guitaric. And that's a guitar.
Also like, your kick.
Yeah, my kick as well, yeah.
Okay.
And I just pulled it through, and somehow it gave me that layer which brought the whole thing to life. I just rendered that, and then I brought it back to like the normal, like without the guitar rig, and then I layered it on top of them.
Oh, that's
and
pretty
it somehow,
cool. Yeah.
It somehow brought a really great layer on top of the low frequencies, which made it sound a lot more organic or something. It's just, but what I'm trying to say is I used a guitar plugin for bass sounds and somehow it worked out, you know? So it doesn't matter why, what the plugin's made for.
No. Do a lot of shit, especially with basses. Sometimes you want like this high little knisper. Like I don't know how to say it, just an edge. You can use Texture, which is a great plugin. Or just the 3x OSC and make a noise signal. I'm gone, huh?
Ralph, turn on your 5G, man. Turn on your 5G.
I'm on 5G. I thought let's not go on the Wi-Fi.
Okay. Winning.
Well, I think the people at home will have heard what Ralph just said, but we fully agree.
Okay, yeah. You should. That's how it works. What did I say? We're discussing.
No, I don't know what wrong.
Yeah, you can use Texture, before. Cool plugin. Said Texture, and or just make your own noise, put it on, blah 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 blah. Then you can use I don't care the Kickstart plugin. It will be cool. Am
great
I back?
Input.
Yeah, but watch out with saying there. Watch out with listening to there are rules, and if you don't do it with some rules, it won't work, because that's what can get you blocked in your creative process as well. Sometimes you got to just push through and just do whatever, do what everybody says doesn't work, do that, and then maybe it does something super new, different, because otherwise you're never gonna challenge the the production
status
what
quo.
Did you say about Skrillex? The status quo of the production,
yeah,
whatever. And that's also with like if you, there's this series mixed with the masters.
But the question was, you could tell what Afrojack said. What?
You talked through me, hein, eh?
Oh yeah, sorry, I didn't know you weren't finished yet. Okay, I don't know what you
said. There's a few people in the chat who say that Ralph is using a gate on his live stream.
Oh man, is it so bad?
And that's one of the rules. You shouldn't do that.
It's kind
it
of
is bad, yeah.
Okay. Pharaoh, well, what I wanted to say about tie chaining about
I'm delayed or what?
Yeah, you're kind of delayed, like you're talking through everyone.
I'm coming back.
Anyway, what I was trying to say about the sidechaining of Afrojack is that what I really liked about his sidechaining was that it was really how do you call it? Like instant, as in it just kind of dipped super quickly to zero. So it was the sound was completely muted and then it came back. Like it gave this pumping feeling to the sounds. I'm not sure if he still does it, actually.
I think sometimes on some of his tracks. Yeah.
But that's what I loved about the whole sidechaining part of things. He's back.
Gate boy. He's back.
Hey, and his mic is working. Woohoo!
Hey!
Hey!
There he is. Okay, perfect.
Now Jay's in the middle with me. That's never a good thing.
Yeah, it's the same for me. Guys, another thing I wanted to discuss, because I had a talk about this last week with a client, and it kind of became interesting. So I was curious to hear your thoughts, which was what does an artist make money on in 2024, 2020, 2025? Like, what's the main sources of income that you guys are focusing on? Because streaming is kind of cutting back.
Fans Centro.
Yeah. Like, what's the main sources of income here?
Shows.
And are there any other thing? Like, let's say the top three?
Music and publishing. So music sales, as in streams, Beatport sales, and
is
then publishing,
Beatport still
I guess.
A thing? Like, do you still sell there?
Yeah, I sold 2 tracks. I got 1 cent. Basically. No, I don't know. It's I think Beatport's definitely a thing for the if tracks are being played live, then you see really that track sell on Beatport really well. But I think shows is I think as an artist it's always smart to focus on, because even if the income of your music is good now, like you said, in general there's less income of music, but also if you have a catalog, it will always decline in sales over the years, even if it's doing really well. Of course, there's exemptions when like the track becomes like all of a sudden a hype on TikTok. But overall, I focus mostly
get used
on
this Netflix
shows.
Series. Then boom.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. It shows, which is the main cash cow. And then you have your music, which are the two most. Artists don't do that much sponsor deals, clothing brands. You see it here and there, but it's not the main stuff.
But
it's touring, definitely.
Is there like something that needs to be added there, or something that's changing over the years? Like, is there a shift?
No, but if you produce, you can. Of course, also make some money producing for others. Good deals there. And we could definitely see a little bit more of a shift towards that.
Towards ghost producing.
Yeah, or asking money for co-productions, which is also okay. Doesn't always have to be as a ghost. That's more what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
But it's because I was talking about it because that specific person noticed that his income was kind of declining over the years. And that's because his fee was under pressure and the royalties are getting lower. While his streams were going up, the payout became lower.
Mm-hmm.
So he was thinking, like, is there anything I'm missing, or is there anything I can do?
I guess.
No.
Welcome to the music industry as an artist.
Yeah, it's like a scattered. Oh, whoops.
Ooh. Ooh.
Whoopsie.
Only fans tease.
Hey. So fanscentro.com/basschecksralph. No.
It would be crazy if it really exists, right? Like if you go there and there's a page, like you actually post photos.
Oh, that would be cool, huh?
That would be cool, yeah.
This like is my butthole.
Like that you've been funny about it for a few weeks and actually are making money on there.
Yeah. I think if people say they go on there for the first month, they would get mad subscriptions. Everybody is like curious.
Exactly.
What would his wiener be like?
Yeah.
And then when they see it, it's like, yeah,
I'll just go.
It's normal. No, what we were talking about. Next
you
question.
Talking about scattered.
Oh yeah, it's a scattered landscape now. You have a lot of different genres, and that makes it so that, if you're not in the top of either genre, that's I can draw it down with this, like these pyramids. I explained it another time. And if you're not high enough in the pyramid, then yeah, you basically fucked.
So how do you see this happening in the future? If stream payouts are going down and like gig fees are also kind of, well, slightly declining, you could say. How do
spend
you see this?
Less money and hope for inflation to stop.
Well, spend less Bitcoin. Money. That's actually good advice. It's like you need to kind of realize how much you're making and project that onto the future, as in calculate that you're going to make less and live accordingly to that. So don't live like a little bit maybe under your what you could afford.
It depends. What do you mean? Could also be like, fuck it, I'm buying a Porsche. This will be the greatest year of my life. And let's see whatever comes next. Different approach.
Like, yeah, how do you say? Don't spend your money on stupid things. If you do spend your money on stupid things, you know, have it calculated so that you're really like, I'm going to spend this amount of money on this stupid thing because it gives me joy or whatever. I think that's very important. I think also, welcome to the music industry. You know, it's you have to accept that you're not sure of a career 10 years from now. And that's part of the risk you're taking. And that's part of the risk that can pay out if you do really well. But it can also fuck you up, basically, in 10 years. So, yeah.
There's a guy in the YouTube stream, Bit3, that says, I see people like Ryos using Patreon, but as an upcoming artist, it's hard to do it. But would you see like a stream of income happening from things like Patreon, like direct fan contact, direct fan payments, let's say, like donations or anything
like that?
The problem
is it will take up so much of your time. It's you really have to love doing it, I think. I did a lot of Twitch streams, but it takes up a lot of your time and energy that I found out I rather spend on doing other stuff, on making music,
golf.
On spending time with my family, on playing golf, so that I become more productive. It doesn't matter what
today.
You spend your time on. It doesn't matter what you spend your time on. If it's golf, if it's watching Netflix, whatever. But you have to, for yourself, realize why you do something. And if you're like, I need to make money, so I'm going to do Patreon, I don't think that's going to work. But that's my philosophy. So
I do think that there's a really big value in the direct fan relationship for the future for artists. As in, I think people really underestimate the power of having fans and having super fans. And I think it's just important that you start to spend more time with them, over like less time on spaces like TikTok, or where people are not even aware of following you. You know, like they just clicked follow 2 years ago.
Yeah,
but like,
I gotta say, yeah. I also sometimes think the people underestimate how much we see of them. It would be cool to, I mean, hey, you had a question of the Pharaoh guy before. He's a follower of ours, and I tend to chat with him sometimes in our inbox, and he also produces. Most of the times you read the messages and then scroll through. You don't going to reply everybody, but I think everybody's unaware of how much you see. So it would be cool if you could easily say to everybody, I see you out there. And but what's it? Am I again?
No, I'm just laughing, as in Josh just joined the stream and he said, like, first time tuning into the live stream instead of the podcast, and Ralph is talking about OnlyFans.
Oh. Oh, well, typically yeah. Me. But
anyway, and I just started laughing. Joey was laughing. So,
but it's always a time constraint. That's the biggest constraint. And what Jopke is saying, yeah, you can spend your time only once. And maybe, yeah, also me, I rather make cool music. The output is ginormous right now. And yeah, let's keep it in OnlyFans terms.
I know. It is gigantic or enormous.
No, ginormous is perfectly fine. Ask ChatGPT. It's cool. You know what I mean.
Okay, let's just ask it. Is ginormous an actual English
word? Yeah, you know what I mean.
I agree.
It's all about communication. New rules.
Sure.
Set boundaries.
How do you pronounce ginormous?
Yeah.
Extremely large. Okay.
That's actually a great track name.
Okay.
So, no, but there are times that I also, I'm a little bit more now back to letting myself show more on socials. Fuck, man. Dot. Yeah. I'm done.
Yeah, that's it. No, but the thing is, like, I do agree that it's obviously it's a time problem, you know, like social media content takes up so much time these days that you want to have a good balance between content production and music production, because both is important as an artist. But what if the content production side can be done less because you start to spend more time on the real fans, so let's say the super fans, and spend less time on creating quick content for socials?
I think if you really want to interact with people, it takes more time and more energy than having your one social channel, basically, or at least you make like one type of content for TikTok. That's easier than getting personal with someone, and or easier and faster, because I think that really requires you to pay attention and like, hey, really interact. Listen, yeah. Write back. That's also, I think, underestimated. People say like, yeah, if you only have 1,000.
Hey, everybody, we're live right now. Say hi, everybody.
Hi.
He just remembers, I need to make content. Yay.
If you have 1,000 really close fans, you can be famous. You know, you can sustain a career. But having those 1,000 close fans, that is takes up a lot of energy, I think.
It depends. Like, obviously you don't talk to them personally every day because that's hard, but like doing live streams in a Discord with 1,000 people every week, like once a week, an hour or 30 minutes, you know, like I think that those kind of things would give a much deeper connection with your fans. Like it's kind of what we do, you know, like we see the same names coming back every week as well, and you already start to build a relationship with those people. I think it's more about that and not like directly talking to them, because that's undoable, and definitely when you become bigger, it's just not scalable, it's not possible. But being in touch, like being present and mingling into the conversation with like your deeper fan base for just an hour a week, I think that should be doable, right? Like, why not?
Hey, did you notice that me and Joey were wearing green shirts? That's cool.
Yeah, I didn't get the memo once again.
Yeah.
No, last time it was me.
I thought the memo was golf attire.
Golf outfit.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
golf attire, but
I don't have it.
Me either.
We have a question from Josh coming in. I recently signed a song that requires a 3-week window either side of the release where I cannot release another song. Is this normal for big labels, or is it negotiable?
No, it's pretty standard. Three weeks is actually short afterwards. They demand sometimes 5 or 6.
That's before 3 weeks and after 3 weeks. So it's 6 in total.
Yeah, okay. But for your own good, that's also better. You also have the release radar going on your track for 2 weeks. So you don't want to release anything for those 2 weeks. That would be a little bit silly.
Does the release radar support it 2 weeks?
Sorry?
Does the release radar playlist, does that support it 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Oh, I thought it was one.
No, two. And so if you release something 3 weeks before, you know, it always goes for each release. So no, it's perfectly normal, fine. It's actually,
it's both normal and negotiable. So that's like a 3-week term is actually maybe even standard. Sometimes I hear 4 weeks, but you can always ask like, hey, can we get rid of the weeks before, or can we do 2 weeks and see what they they come back with. Everything's negotiable in contracts. You just should ask, and then maybe you get a no, but
you can always ask. Yeah, that's right. Another thing that Corey mentioned is that he said, I think you just need to become an entrepreneur all round and do what you love to do. that really helps in being an artist. What do you think? Like, having entrepreneurial traits helps as an artist?
Yeah, it could be. It's always good. You need to, yeah, it's basically a hard question, to be honest.
Why?
It just depends on what you want as a person. We're all different. If you don't care about living in a nice house or whatever, if you don't care about all the stuff, you just want to make music, that's the reward itself. And you don't need to be an entrepreneur. Just, yeah. So I always say that's asking me how a clock works. There's so many turning stuff. There's no one answer to such a question.
I do think that the difference in this matter is that if it's your hobby, it doesn't matter. So if you just want to have fun making music, it doesn't matter. I think the minute you decide that you want to build a career out of this, you should develop some sort of entrepreneurial traits, because you will have to deal with a few entrepreneurial things, you know, like it's, I think that that's where the shift comes. The minute when you decide this has to become my job, my living, I think that that's where the shift kicks in.
I'm still stuck on entrepreneurial traits, because what are those? That's actually very difficult, because there are, of
being
course,
self-disciplined, as in creating.
No,
your
know,
own work.
I could name a few, but I mean, like, what works for me as an entrepreneur might not work at all for Ralph, and that's what makes this question, I think, so difficult. Because, like Ralph said, what is your goal and how will you achieve that? That's two questions that are very important and different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the doing what you love part is,
yeah, it's important.
Important. And I think if you do what you love on the side, you need to make sure you have an income. You need to make money.
Yeah.
Either you do it with what you love. That's, of course, the dream. But maybe you can't. You have to do something else on the side. But yeah, definitely always try to do what you love. Even if you can't make money off it, then try to make money on the side. I think that's very important for your soul. But also, if you ever want to make it, you need to
soul.
To really like it, I think.
It's important for your soul.
It is. I really think so. That's why I play golf, man. It's important for my soul, even though I suck and it sucks.
Are you suck at golf? What's your handicap?
I don't want to name my handicap on this podcast.
Why?
Because I suck.
It's like 23.
No, higher.
Higher? Man,
yeah,
suck.
Yeah, I really suck.
No, I actually don't know.
I have a good swing.
You're my hero.
But ask anyone in golf, it's the best thing ever.
No bueno.
That's the best thing ever.
Hey, but that's the answer right there. But you love it, right? So
yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but exactly. It's also his hobby. So it doesn't matter that it doesn't matter, because there's no money involved.
No, but I don't make a distinguishing between hobby and not
but
hobby.
I gotta say, when you're kind of good at something like producing, which he is good at, golf maybe not so much, but hey,
what did you say?
He's
what?
Good at producing. Yeah, he knows his way around the studio. But if you then approaching a certain level and you could make money and the door is opening up, then it's not a choice anymore, to be honest. It's not a hobby then anymore. Then you crave, you want that, and
I really always hate the word hobby, because it implies that you don't really take it seriously to the full extent. And I think I've had a friend that always said, no, music is always hobby, and he was a really good drum player. No, but that's always hobby, so it's always going to be a hobby. And I was like, I was making music at the time already, and I was like, hey, but I don't see it like that. I see it could become something big.
Yeah.
But that's why maybe it's my personal experience with the word hobby. But you have to, if you do a hobby, it's like you do it because you love to do it. And that can be with a lot of things. It can grow into something bigger. It can always grow into something bigger.
Exactly. Like, I think a hobby
it can
is
always
defined...
grow into something bigger. Back to OnlyFans.
Hey,
here we are.
I think a hobby is always defined by doing something you love without expecting something else, like without expecting any outcome, just enjoying the process. I think that that's what a hobby defines. And I think as soon as it becomes your job and when you make a living from it, that's not just the only factor you should think about, because you're also kind of, it's an important factor, it's the driving factor, but at the same time you also have to look at the financial aspects of things, because it's your income, you know. You depend on it.
I gotta say, we always looked at, okay, we also, if we want to do this, we need to make money, because how cool would it be if we could spend all our time on our hobby now, on our music and our performance. So yeah, but again, it's a choice. Yeah, you don't need to, but we did. Yeah.
Another question from the Pharaoh. I'm also stuck with releasing tracks. It's not because of perfection, kind of. It's mostly waiting for feedback from A&Rs or professional producers. What do you guys do? Waiting for feedback or just do whatever?
If they don't respond, they don't like it.
Well, what's the time cap you give it? Like, how many time do you give a label to respond?
You know, you just work send on the it next out track. To everybody.
Yeah, and work on the next track after that. Have your mailing list, set up a nice Google
document. Reminder, and then on to the next one.
Well, what's the time cap? Is that 2 weeks?
It actually doesn't matter. Yeah. Because
well, you don't want to have that song laying around for a month, right?
No, but if nobody responds, or you should first, okay, we sometimes also have a track and I'm like, I would like to have a collab on this one, but I also say, and then you set out like, to whom am I going to send it, and what do I want for this? I say to myself, okay, it's also something that I would like to release if it would not be a collab. So then I say, I only want big names or none others. But for the Pharaoh, it's also getting no, if you get no response, maybe then it's just not good enough. Could also be a thing. For us, that's also because if nobody responds, nobody says anything about it, then I'm starting to think, maybe it's just shit and I shouldn't release it.
Yeah, but I also think that shouldn't matter because you sent it out. At least that's what I do. And I work on the next thing, you know?
Definitely.
And then you work on the next thing.
But he still has the choice. If nobody responds, then I'll self-release.
But the problem is if you continue working on the next thing, like, you should define a point where you just say, okay, now it's taken too long, I'm going to continue. Otherwise, the track just stays on the shelf.
But that's the answer. You should define a point. So, Pharaoh, you should define, hey, I'm going to send it out, and in 3 weeks, just pick a date, maybe say 3 weeks. I'm going to remind them, and then I'm going to not care anymore. And I would also suggest to send it to other producers and friends who also affiliated with music, because there sometimes lies some weird connection to another producer or DJ, or some people really like it, or that can help also a lot.
Yeah, people are also upcoming and busy with it. And
One other thing that I hear a lot, like, do you send it at multiple labels at the same time or just one?
Multiple.
Depends on, sometimes you have like, you really want to go for a certain label, and you also can tell them then, hey, I've only sent it to you guys now. But this also depends, this is a bit of a tactic, you know, like,
yeah,
you
can it's be a like, tactic.
I can be like, hey, this big label, I've only sent it to you guys. So they are going to be like, ooh, this might be interesting then. Let's check
it out.
Do.
Hey, those guys already responded, but I'd rather release it with you guys.
Yeah.
They can fight.
You can do that.
Nobody's actually really interested.
Yeah.
But you should.
Before you know it, it's like, they offer me in advance.
But you should read the room, I got to say. It's a daring tactic.
Are advances still a thing? Like, do you often get advances on tracks, or is it like gone?
Big.
Sometimes.
Big tracks with hit potential, but by then, let's say Drugs from Amsterdam is one of those tracks that really blew up before it was released. And then like a big major label knows this is going to be a hit, so we're going to back it with some yeah, big advance or whatever they want to do.
Yeah, but at that time it's already proven.
Yeah, I think it was first released at Insomniac Records, and then I think, I don't know who, maybe a Sony or something, they took over and they pay a big advancement. But they there's still advancement payments on certain tracks, and it's not. I mean, it's good to see that the labels then have skin in the game. They need to work to get their money back, and I actually like that as an incentive way. But okay, let's be honest, on club tracks, chanceless, they won't do it.
I actually heard last week that from multiple artists, actually, and I think Ralph mentioned it as well a few weeks ago, that even big labels are getting really lazy. Like, they don't do that much for your release anymore.
Yeah, it depends. You know, for them, it's easy to make it a numbers game. If you release a lot of stuff, and sometimes there's a hit in between, you won't lose much on all the stuff you do, but you win big on the shit that pulls through, that gains traction. So that's actually not a good incentive for the big labels. But I do get that tactic. And but for you as an artist, that's horrendous, because if it doesn't gain traction within the first 2 weeks, the chances of it to become a hit, they are drastically less. And of course, you never know, but I mean, the chances are slim. So yeah, then it's weird. Then you have the track, it's released, and nobody works it anymore after 2-3 weeks. That's just shit. But they won't give you the rights back because, hey, could be a hit.
Exactly. And, like the featured in the Netflix series.
Or TikTok. You never know from which angle, like, all the attention comes from. But it's something you got to balance out also for yourself. And I mean, that's the game. It's also not supposed to be easy. Yeah, let's keep it clear. It's a cool industry to work in. It's not an easy industry.
Definitely,
it's
not.
A big shark pond.
Everybody and it's
fends
like
for
also,
themselves.
I always think it's funny when people say, this kind of money, I can't even afford rent with this, or I can't even afford living with the money I make from music. And I always think, no one's said that you would, you know, no one's just going to give you money. Oh, we're going to give you more money because you can't pay your rent. No, that's why this industry that's quite like very easy. You bring in money, you earn money, and otherwise it's nothing or less.
No,
you know?
It's not like this, given that okay, you're in now and you make money.
Exactly.
And everybody fends for themselves. I gotta say, some stuff is like a writer and they make a cool track, and somebody makes a hit, they go touring, they make a million, and the writers, they make 25,000 euros. I don't know what, but sometimes it's in those respects, that's not a real weird order to say.
Yeah,
that feels crooked, but yeah,
feels crooked. But that's where you have to also see who takes the risk, who has the name, who builds the whole profile.
Oh
of the
man,
song,
we've
who,
been in discussions.
It's way more.
No, somebody
difficult
has to pay the marketing budget and everything. All the expenses go in front of the success. So, okay, you want a share? Let's then also give you a share in the cost. And then they say, and I mean, yeah.
That's what someone else also said. Like, do you think labels are smart to put like 200, 250 euros of marketing fees? So they will never pay a release, as we never make such amount on streams or sale.
That's just shit. I hate it. All those fucking recoupables. And I mean, pay in-house shit, 500 euros. Pay for an artwork, 250 euros. Fuck off. That's your... but hey, I got to say, it's also how the world works. And also, we just take it.
Hate the game, not the player.
Yeah, but I really hate the game. And it's like, as an artist, you have to pay for them running the business as well. That's not how it works.
Know the game, understand the game, try to understand the game is also important.
If you go to a label that is not owned by the artists, go check out the CEO and check out how much time he spends on a jet ski or drinking oatmeal
what kind of
lattes
car he drives
on cool places. If they do that a lot, he will probably give you a shit deal. End of story.
Quote.
Yeah, it's just that's how it is. And you know it up front. So, yeah.
True. Yeah. Okay, guys.
Jet skis are fun, though.
Jet skis are fun. We'll leave it at that. To everyone who's listening and watching the live stream right now,
we should end with one positive thing.
I'm going to end with
jet skis are fun.
Jet skis are fun. Yeah, let's talk about jet skis.
Yeah. Jet skis are fun. Buy jet
water
skis.
Sports. Yeah. You two guys look like when you're. Are you like sunbathers or?
Yeah, definitely.
Dude, I got a sunburn today. You can't really see it.
Last Saturday when the sun was shining, I actually laid down in the garden for like an hour and just soaked it all up.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was an amazing weather. And I cannot wait for spring to really come. Next week it will be shit weather again. But after that.
Today's a great day, though.
Today was good.
Today's
a bit cold. A bit cold. It wasn't really springy, but the sun was out, and I have a sunburn.
It's funny, though. Like, here we are, all three of us, in a dark room without any windows.
Yeah, I have two windows, but I actually sealed them because...
Yeah, I have a small window. Like a...
You're a vampire.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, to everyone in the live stream, if you're not part of the artist coaching community in Discord yet, make sure to join now. I'll drop in the link now in the chat.
Thumbs up, like, and
thumbs
subscribe.
Thumbs up, like, supply, subscribe.
Subscribe.
Subscribe. And we will be back next week with another episode. So see you all right there. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.